How beautiful was that? Thank you, choir and Michael. Two thoughts came to me. One was, we're so glad you've come. So glad you're here. And also, we're going to have a little time to practice today from the reading we heard earlier, because we're going to go over 11:30. So we're doing a little extra practice this morning on our, our worship skills or something. So let's start with today's sermon title, Go Fish, Go. It is a takeoff on the classic children's book, Go Dog, Go. Is this familiar to anybody? I hope. P.D. Eastman worked with Theodore Geisel, who is better known as Dr. Seuss, and published numerous books under the Random House Beginner Books label. The purpose of the book, Go Dog, Go, and it's not always clear when you're reading it, is to teach new vocabulary to early readers. There are a total of 75 words in this book set in a context that would inform their meaning. Words like big, little, in, out, up, down, boat, hat. Big conversation about hats. If any of you are familiar, do you like my hat? I do not. Goodbye, goodbye. Forming relationships, yeah. It's an early reader. It has also been suggested that the book is about relationships. In the end, for no apparent reason, the two dogs who have been passing each other to no avail finally find common ground. Do you like my hat? I do. What a hat. I like it. I like that party hat. So for our purposes this morning, the relevance of the book has more to do with vocabulary, with words that get learned and given context from an early age that impact our abilities to be in relationship with each other. And so then what's with the fish? Because the title of the sermon is Go Fish, Go. That's about context and environment and how we wake up to it. There's a great joke about two fish in conversation, and one says, how's the water? And the other says, what the heck is water? So on this very last day of April, the month when our theme is joy, and spring is bursting on the scene all around us, we are being asked by people of color within our tradition to confront some very difficult vocabulary this week. Words that likely have been situated in context that spans over a great many years. We are being asked to recognize the relevance of the term white supremacy in what are possibly new ways for many of us. So I titled this sermon, Go Fish, Go, because it's about vocabulary and relationships and waking up to what we are swimming in. This congregation has been focusing on racial justice work for quite some time now. So I want to first be clear and identify myself. I am a white, cisgendered, straight, raised Protestant woman. And at the risk of overgeneralizing, the only people who have likely swum more obliviously to their water than I have been raised to are white, cisgendered, straight, and raised Protestant men. It is likely that there are some among us who identify as people of color, who are undoubtedly more aware of how white the water we swim in looks now and always has. And I want to say that I appreciate your willingness, if indeed you are willing, to struggle along with those of us who are white as we come to terms with new relationships and new understandings. In many ways, this is a journey of discomfort for all of us. And if you are new here or visiting today, you may wonder why we are being asked to host on this particular Sunday or the next one, which are the two options for this white supremacy teach-in, that more than 500 of our sibling UU congregations are participating in. We all might ask, why now? And then we might respond with, why not? Isn't it about time? Wouldn't we always want to be awake to the water we're in, whatever it looks like? In fact, aren't we somewhat overdue? Yes, and the invitation, the encouragement, is a function of recent events within the Unitarian Universalist Association that have drawn attention to the presence of a system that undoubtedly continues to privilege the normative power identities among us, white, straight, cisgender, ordained within a faith tradition, and male. I could add able-bodied and young to that list. Please note that I did not reference individuals, but systems, which, like water, are the environments we exist in. And we are being asked to take a careful look all around us. A week or so ago, a post by blogger Alex Capitan, who some of you might know, writes at radicalcopyeditor.com, offered some helpful edification. White supremacy, he suggests, is a system of social order that keeps power and resources consolidated among white elites, using an ideology that upholds whiteness as being best or most normal. What it's not, his post continues, it's not necessarily active hatred of people who are not white or active belief that white people should rule over everyone else. White supremacy is not limited to the most overtly racist fringe elements of society. And it is not a slur or an insult. It is not an historical artifact. What it is, he continues, it is the water most white people swim through without realizing they are wet. How's the water? One fish says. What the heck is water? The other replies. White supremacy, according to Capitan, is a basic fact of U.S. culture and everyday life and a foundational truth of this country. Imagine our story this morning, the coat of the very familiar. It's so known, even in its assumptions. It's so reliable and familiar, almost an invisible familiar. Remember, white supremacy is about a system, a pervasive and familiar feeling system. In the book Learning to Be White, Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Tandeka, offers us a fairly accessible way to appreciate what might white supremacy might look like or feel like. In response to a question by a student about what it felt like to be black, she invented what she calls the race game. The race game, as my luncheon partner very quickly discovered, has only one rule, she tells us. For the next 7 days, she must use the ascriptive term white whenever she mentioned the name of one of her Euro-American cohorts. She must say, for instance, my white husband, Phil, or my white friend, Julie, or my lovely white child, Jackie. Tandeka guaranteed that if the student did this for a week and then met her for lunch a week later, Tandeka says, I could answer her question using terms she would understand. African Americans have learned to use a racial language to describe themselves and others. Euro-Americans also have learned a pervasive racial language, but in their lexicon, their own racial group becomes the great unsaid. The coat of the very familiar. Tandeka describes hearing back from the Euro-American woman originally challenged. She couldn't do it, she wrote apologetically, though she hoped someday to have the courage to do so. Courage? Why courage? What had I asked her to endure? What was she afraid of seeing? What didn't she want to feel, to glimpse, or to know? We can imagine the woman didn't want to feel the water, perhaps, that she was swimming in. The story Tandeka referenced happened in 1991, more than 15 years ago. I think many of us have gotten better at being willing to identify our whiteness. That change, in and of itself, is useful in helping us racialize ourselves, those of us who identify as white. among the plethora of what we often hear described as other, as though our mainstream whiteness sets the standard, which actually is what white supremacy is designed to do. That movement hasn't happened without intention, of course, without a willingness to see the water, which, as we heard earlier, takes practice. To become exceptional at one's craft, Jolani Coachella reminded us, you must do two things. First, you must practice with intention. You have to aim to become very good. And second, you must practice a lot and consistently. We have so much to learn and so much to practice. Some days it makes me very weary. I wish you could see the pile of books that, despite my efforts, grows taller around me all the time, and the online resources. I can't set up systems fast enough to organize them, just to keep track. But this is soul work. This is soul-stretching spiritual practice to wake up to the world around us, to notice the water. White supremacy is not just about race, although it is about race because of who it advantages. But white supremacy is a system that pervades our culture, also has characteristics has characteristics that effectively perpetuate an environment that deserves all of us, that separates us based on power and authority, and who has the resources to make what happen. And the reason it's about race is because it is a function of an historically white way of doing things. So white supremacist culture is hierarchical, perfectionist, paternalistic, and defensive. It values bigger and more, individualism over community, results over process, either-or thinking, and quantity over quality. I wonder if any of you have seen the picture of our current president, a white, male, cisgendered, straight billionaire, by the way, signing the executive order impacting international funding for family planning. The president is seated in the middle of a table facing the camera, surrounded by an entire group of white men in suits, signing legislation that will impact women all over the world. It's kind of stunning, actually. Hierarchical, paternalistic, either-or thinking. He's not the only president to find himself in a picture like this. He's just the most recent. White supremacy dictates who's in the room and who's at the table, even where the table is. I wonder if you have ever seen the beautiful arched stone bridges that lead from Manhattan out to Long Island. They're on what used to be one of the major roads out of the city, and they're too short for buses. Who needs a bus if you can afford a car? But if you can't afford a car, and public transportation is the only way to get there, and the bus can't get through the arch, then you know who's welcome and where. I wonder who's in charge of setting the bus routes to West Roxbury. When I was a little girl, I often heard, "Anne, if it's nice, it's right." So this was likely about who got invited to my birthday party or whether I had to write a thank you note, but two things came to mind when I reflect on that. Fear of open conflict, which is a white culture thing. It's rude to raise difficult issues, or it's at least out of line. It makes people uncomfortable. Let's not do that. So on the off chance that it was about something more substantive, let's just say nice was always the default mode. And in my house, there was always a right way, an either-or way, hierarchical, paternalistic right way. Now, if this were simply the culture in my house or your house that I grew up in, and you got to have your culture in your home, and we all kind of figured out how to bring our respective cultures together in our common environment, then great. But that's not actually how it works. The common environment we live in is white supremacy. That's the one we are all swimming in this country. And unless I'm awake to that, I'll never know if there's a different way to do things, a different way to make decisions, to be inclusive, or to prioritize other decision-making patterns that might invite other voices into the room. Not everyone in positions of authority is as nice as the woman wearing the coat of the very familiar. In fact, we know that most people in positions of authority hang on to the access that got them there in the first place. And make no mistake that this culture that we're swimming in is about money as well and access to those resources. And very few people give that up easily. I mentioned earlier we have so much to learn and so much to unlearn about our assumptions and patterns. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of care. And all the while, we have things in our lives that consume our attention, and rightly so. We have people to care for and good work to do. And by the way, joy, it's April, remember joy? But if we ever want to be the welcoming, open, and curious people we speak of wanting to become, we can't afford to turn away from this particular growing edge. We need to learn to see the water in all its nuanced and seemingly invisible ways. Once you start noticing, you realize it's everywhere and it dictates so much of our common lives in ways that we simply weren't aware of before. While our association is considering its own systems and the influence of white supremacy on its functioning, we are being asked right here at Theodore Parker Church to do the same. We are being asked to figure out how we participate in the system that constrains our choices and our creativity and our inclusivity. How does our governance, for example, serve or constrain us? How do our default modes determine who feels welcome here and who doesn't? We claim to be people who believe that revelation is not sealed in Unitarian Universalism. Typically, we reference scripture when we think of that. But what it really holistically means is that we are willing to pick up the familiar and consider it again. What rings true within it and what doesn't? White supremacy is the system that has dictated who gets to wear the coat of the very familiar for far too long. When we become aware of that water, as though born into a new world, the question becomes what we are willing to do about it. Go, fish, go. That is our challenge.